Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 10th of September, Anno Domini 2016, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing
you... No, you're just going to hold on here for one moment.
Am I? Okay.
Wait, what's going on?
What?
All right.
For all you folks that don't know, today is Nick Francesco's birthday.
Yay!
Happy birthday, old
Yay
man.
Me. Yes. Thank you. I am old now. happily so. I beat the odds to get here, and I'm delighted to say so.
No. So, 39 again?
Me and Jack Benny, 39
nice.
Forever.
Oh, good for you.
Well, exactly.
That's what we're saying. And this month is the anniversary. Last week was our anniversary of our show. Nick's birthday is this week, and then Steve Ray and I are coming up all in September.
Yep.
All good Virgos.
Yep. Yep. That's exactly right. We're all New Year's babies.
That's right.
Think about it.
Well, for me, it's twice because I have a sister that's a year younger than me to the day.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah. How would you like that? Your first birthday present? Here's a baby sister. Can I get it to return?
Yeah, right.
I wanted a pickup truck.
I wanted it. I wanted a gun shot.
Tonka truck, please.
Please. Can't you take it back? Chemistry set?
I want it.
Oh, well.
All right. Yes, it is my birthday. So.
How old are you?
I am, what year is this? No, I'm 66 years old.
Oh, come on.
I'm absolutely proud to say this because, like I said, I beat the odds to get here.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a point where we didn't think I was going to hit double digits. And so hitting 66 is a joy for me.
Oh, boy.
That still makes me older than both of you.
Yeah, you're old. I'm old. You're decrepit.
I'm older than dirt. I invented dirt.
I'll just be over here playing with my toys.
That's right. When they find the first rock ever created, they'll find Dave's initials carved in it.
Yeah.
It was mine.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
All mine.
All right. It's iPhone 7, Watch 2, and Jack 0.
Bum, bum, bum.
Bum, bum, bum. Apple's new iPhones and an upgraded Apple Watch have generated tons of noise and hype. For those of you who are wondering what actually went on at the introduction... here's what you really need to know. You don't need to rush to upgrade your iPhone or Apple Watch if you recently bought one. The people who may want to jump to buy one are those who have owned their current iPhone for more than 2 years, or those whose entire self-worth is wrapped up in a piece of plastic that they carry around in their pocket. Apple's iPhone 7 and 7 Plus look roughly the same as their predecessors, the iPhone 6S and 6S Plus. The new phones have rounded corners. The smaller model continues to have a 4.7-inch screen, whereas the larger one has a 5.5-inch screen. So, what actually is new? The iPhones have a new processor that's about 40% faster than the previous models. They also include a physical home button with force sensitivity for the first time, a feature that responds with a vibration when the button is pressed. As a result, they call that, I think, taptic response as opposed to haptic response.
Yeah.
As a result, the button no longer depresses when it's pressed, which might make it more durable than the previous iterations. And for those of you who prefer the actual physical depression, now you can just be depressed. The new iPhones also include improved cameras capable of capturing a wider color range. The larger model, the 7 Plus, has two cameras on the rear that work together to improve zooming capability and let you also take pictures where the background is blurry. Other than that, the iPhone will continue to come in silver, gold, and pink with two new colors, matte black and shiny jet black, which is already sold out. The antenna bands, which were thick lines wrapping around the back of the older iPhones, are no longer visible on the new iPhones, making the devices look cleaner. The biggest change is the item that is missing, the 3.5-millimeter audio port for plugging in earphones and speakers. Apple says it sacrificed the port to make more room for faster processors and better battery life, which other company seemed to have been able to do well. While making the device water and dust resistant. It's all fighting for space within that same enclosure, Apple spokes robot said about the many components in a smartphone, including the headphone jack. Apple is encouraging users instead to consider wireless accessories or wired earphones that hook in through the iPhone's Lightning connector, which is also used for power charging. Of course, there's no wireless charging for the phone. The new iPhones will start shipping to customers on September 16th with a starting price of $650 for the iPhone 7 and $770 for the iPhone 7 Plus. They can be ordered online beginning, well, yesterday, actually. It's interesting to note, and this is my favorite part of this whole Megillah.
Okay, go ahead.
I went and looked this up. The headphone jack was invented in 1878.
Really?
The jack itself for telephone.
Oh, okay.
Switchboards.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
which makes
those pictures,
it, by the way, 3 years older than the gunfight at the OK Corral. Just to put it in perspective for you.
And it also means that it has existed in three different centuries and two different millennia.
That's exactly right. And Apple's trying to kill it. Apple also upgraded the Apple Watch, its smartwatch that acts like a companion for the phone. The new version includes GPS for tracking your runs. The device is water-resistant for swimmers. The new Watch Series 2 is also faster. It will start shipping on September 16th with a starting price of $370. Apple also revised the operating system powering the Apple Watch called Watch OS. The new version, Watch OS 3, will introduce a more intuitive interface and be included with the new Apple Watch. Watch OS 3 will also be available as a free update for the old, decrepit, horrible, almost as old as Dave Enright, Apple Watch.
Thank you.
In the end, Apple's products event on Wednesday may have been more about theater than substantive change to its devices. All the real changes are hidden and were hardly mentioned at all, really, when you get right down to it. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like to remind you, is new iPhones and Apple Watch. And your choices are OMG, squee, I've already ordered mine, I'll wait a bit, and I what now? I don't have any idea how many there are. Oh, here we go. Oh, I see. It didn't take my my vote.
You got to shake your fist at it.
Unbelievable.
There it goes.
All right, here we go. Yeah, that worked.
It does work.
Well done. There are 24 of them. Most of you said, I what now? One person squeed. One person already ordered it. And that's that. But I know you'll have more to say about this. So if you scroll down on the right, you will see under Fascinating Stuff, the forums, the second forum down is a poll discussion. And so far, at least the first discussion there is 10 September 16, new iPhones and Apple Watch. There are three posts so far, so we hope you will join us there. And, of course, you can join us online by giving us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Yep.
Now, the interesting thing to me is all the stuff that wasn't announced.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
For example, wireless charging.
Inductive charging with an antenna.
Wouldn't you think that when you take away the audio jack, and if people are not going to buy the $150, by the way, set of headphones.
Oh, yeah, the wireless ones that they've announced.
And want to plug something in, and that means they can no longer charge and listen.
Correct, yes.
Wouldn't you think they would also offer wireless charging so you could listen and charge?
I tend to see the situation with Apple where they make a big change like this, especially to the case design. They start deleting ports. And we were just talking about this before the show, about Apple's fascination, almost anorexia, of desire to be thinner and thinner and thinner. We see a big change like this, and then we see a revision, usually about 6 to 12 months later, where they improve things, or they might add a feature that really helps make that compromise from the previous year much more palatable.
Well, you can't take the back off. So
that's true.
You know, on my phone,
and you never could on an iPhone.
Well, yeah, but my point is, on my phone, it came without wireless charging, but you could buy a separate back. that gave you wireless charging.
Right. You had that modularity.
Right. Mm-hmm. For the iPhone, you would have to encase it in something, which now makes it not thin anymore.
That's true. The Apple has always been trying to come up with designs that are more of an appliance. They are a unique thing that's not meant to be customized. It's not designed to be to have its components changed. But what I'll call the PC world, everybody else,
right,
has always been a very modular, very hobbyist-focused, very tinkerable, adjustable, customizable
environment. Well, what did you just tell me about your MacBook Pro?
Well, this particular one that I have is a few years old, admittedly. But it has features that I appreciate. And one of its features is that I can take the bottom of the case off and change the drive to an SSD, which really, really helps.
Right.
I can max out the memory aftermarket myself.
Right.
Which helps me save money doing that.
And you can change the battery.
I can change the battery to a fresher one.
Now,
and
look,
I appreciate that because I'm a geek and I want to be able to customize what I have.
Whether or not you're the geek or you take it to somebody else who does it for you,
right,
you are able to extend the life of your phone. Look at his problem with his Samsung.
Burn, baby, burn.
with the Samsung IED that he's got in his pocket.
It's really hard to do the apps when you got those oven mitts on, isn't it?
If right now what has to happen is they're gonna cover.
That's right.
What are they going to do? You send you a box. You send your phone back. They send you a new one.
No, what I have to do is, from what I've been told so far, both by Samsung and Verizon, is supposedly this week they will have a shipment in.
Okay.
And I just have to come in, and they will, Samsung has this app, which they've had for a while,
right,
that'll, they can just quick copy everything from one phone to the other. They take, give me the new phone, and they take the old one.
Right.
Now, ship it back to,
on the other hand, because Samsung is trying to be Apple, you can't change the battery on his phone.
And that's why.
How much easier would it have been if they could say, come and pick up your new battery, pop the back off, put the new battery, and walk out the door. You're done.
Yeah, right. They could have had batteries shipped overnight to all of the stores.
Exactly. Instead, they have to ship new phones, which is going to cost them billions of dollars.
Oh, and for my inconvenience, they're giving me a $25 gift card that I can use against my bill or towards
$25. Wow!
To buy the gas it's going to take you to get to the store.
At least it'll buy another.
It's still something. It's something rather than nothing.
It'll replace the screen protector, which I am a firm believer. Screen protector sounds.
Right. But it's the same idea, right? If there ends up being a problem with the new phone,
sure,
you can't fix it.
It becomes a problem for the manufacturer to solve.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just I don't get it. I mean, I understand it makes the phone cheaper, so they save some. Not that you get that savings, but they get that savings.
Right.
And I get that. And it means that, like you said, they can control everything without
they know having, precisely what's inside it.
Well,
at that point,
yes,
because it's welded shut.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But I think that taking that choice away from people.
Well, I think
for those of us who like, of course, I'm a Linux user,
right?
And I'm a Linux user because I like having as much choice as possible.
You want to compile your own kernel,
exactly right.
You know what?
Me and Jen too.
But I think hindsight is always 20/20. That this taught Samsung a very important lesson. Removable batteries.
Oh, I bet it didn't.
Will definitely be something in the next versions of phones coming out.
I bet
just
it won't.
In case. Just the case.
Nope. I bet it won't. On the other hand,
cost them in money
for my next phone. I'm looking at Huawei. Is that how it's pronounced?
Huawei.
I don't care how they pronounce it.
Or if you know how to pronounce it, call in and tell us.
Yeah. Would you please? They have phones that are slightly below mid range in price.
Okay.
And slightly above mid range in specs.
Okay.
And that's a sweet spot, I think, for a lot of people.
The Hyundai of,
exactly,
of cell phones.
Exactly. And they're selling massive amounts of them. And we'll see where that takes us.
Delivering value to customers turns out to be popular?
Yeah, apparently it does.
For a fair price?
Unbelievable, isn't it?
They still do that?
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, Meenik Francesco, and you. And we have Brian waiting on the line. We'll get to him when we get back. It's 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And I should mention, Steve Ray, one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest. Probably heading for the OK Corral.
Yep. Yep. That sounds plausible.
Yeah, I might. To commemorate that.
Just to let you know, I might not be here next week.
Okay.
Turns out I got my weekends confused.
That happens when you're as old as
you
are.
Yeah, I know it. No, the whole Enright clan is getting together for a picnic.
All 843 of them?
As many as we can get together, yeah.
Wow.
That's one big picnic table.
Yeah. Well, my dad was one of 19.
Okay.
I'm one of six.
And, were all of those 19 born on the same day, too?
Yeah. No, matter of fact, two sets of twins were.
Okay.
My grandmother did have two sets of twins.
Born on the same day sounds about right.
His father did try hard to hit one every day of the year, but only made 19.
Didn't yet. Yeah, my grandfather, you know, lost it. What can I say? God love him. But yeah, no.
All right. So
yeah, we're having a huge picnic. So if you hear, you know, police showing up or something else, it's just a bunch of Irish people getting together, you know, being rowdy.
So then writes again.
Yeah,
that man writes.
Well, they used to back in the day. I know this. We got Brian on the phone.
But, he'll wait.
Yeah. Back in the day, we used to get together as when I was a kid for Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. and they used to have to rent the Polish Falcon Club.
Wait, what was that?
They used to rent the Polish Falcon Club. My uncle used to work there because it was a huge hall, and it's the only place that could hold us all.
Right.
Because all my aunts and uncles and cousins, we just jammed that hall. And I remember one year the DNC did up a big article. It said, eat, and it went from real big print down to small, and it listed how every year we got together for Thanksgiving and listed all of the names went on and on and on. And the article, you know, had to go easily, you know, four columns over, you know, so far down. It was like, that was so cool.
That's
cool.
Very funny.
So, yeah, we're trying to keep because I know my grandparents, that was always the thing, family, you know, and getting together and that for the holidays and that. So, since they've gone, family, we've been trying to do it, and they did it last year, and trying to again this year. Supposedly some folks from out west are coming in, too. So
that sounds like
I say, if you
fun.
Hear riots and all that, it's just a bunch of Enrights getting together.
Just the Enrights.
We won't be alarmed.
Yeah.
Well, all the roads will be a lot less congested, though.
Yeah. This is
true. If they're all at a party.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rush hour getting to the party.
That's good news. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Brian from Rochester, New York. Brian, what's up?
Oh, we're having a good time, guys. Just enjoying the sunshine, you know?
Exactly. Right. While it's around.
Okay. I'm running Windows 10.
Yeah.
My wife and I both have accounts on the same machine, set up pretty much the same way. We use Eudora for our mail.
Wow. Haven't heard of that one in a while.
Yeah.
Well, okay. It works. Hey, what the heck?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, bro, don't fix it.
Yeah. And I collect my stuff from Roadrunner and Gmail on it. We both do.
Okay.
All right. This happens on my account, but it never happens on my wife's account. Every day I get an add security exception location, imap.gmail.com.933.
Yep.
Yeah. It says get certificate. I've done that.
Okay.
It says permanently store this exception. I've done that. Confirm the security exception. I've done that. This thing will pop up every day. Constantly, whether my Gmail account is open or not, and it says the exact same thing. And if I say confirm it, it does it again. I've had to do it as many as 60 times in one sitting.
Wow.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just once or twice.
Okay.
Well, like I say, it happens on my account, but not on my wife's.
You are doing everything correct. You are checking your email, and Eudora, dutifully for years and years now, has been checking your account and making a connection with Gmail's mail server.
Right.
And it intends to do that in a secure way so
right.
that nobody standing in between you and the mail server can, overhear what the mail server wants to bring to you.
Right.
The challenge right now is your computer is not respecting the command that you've given it to please remember the certificate that the Gmail server is handing you in order to prove that it is who it says it is.
But if I go and look in my security settings, it's there. So if I go into Eudora Security,
yeah,
it says, yep, that Gmail thing, that's an accepted certificate. That's fine. So,
Gmail at 933 or Gmail
at 587?
No, .933.
Okay. That's the secured SSL port that Gmail communicates on when you are asking the server about new messages. So that part seems normal. And this is Eudora that's promoting this message towards you?
Yeah, well, it's coming from Gmail itself.
Okay, yeah. The certificate is coming from Gmail.
Right.
And it's Eudora, or is it Windows that's complaining about the certificate?
Eudora.
Okay. All right.
Is it 933 or 993?
I'm sorry, 993.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
We're checking it out for you.
And Google is this is Eudora 7? Say yes. Just say yes.
Please say yes.
Qualcomm.
It's the newest one.
OSE version 1.
OSE. Okay. Same idea. All right. Oh dear.
We're furiously Googling for
it. I don't know that that's... Okay, your wife is the administrator on this account, on this machine, yeah?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And you're not.
Correct.
That's the problem, I think.
Yeah.
The problem is that it's trying to save this information. Again, it's probably a new certificate because Google is changing their certificates because, you know, God forbid the internet isn't secure enough.
Oh. This has been going on for months.
Yeah. And they've been changing all of them, and it started actually 6 months ago, 8 months ago. What is it? September. It started in January. So the point here is that if you were to log in as the administrator,
yeah,
or, you know, have set your account as an administrator, log in, get your mail, the theory is it will work, and then you can set yourself back.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of, it seems at least that that's what the problem is here.
But once I set it back, it'll start all over again.
Theoretically not, because now you've saved the new certificate.
Okay.
See, the problem is not that you don't have a certificate. You've got the old certificate.
Oh.
And it wants to replace it with the new certificate.
Okay, so if I do that through, or just have, go into Lynn's account and give myself administrative privileges.
Right.
Change that, go up and confirm that setting, and then go back out.
Right. And then log in as yourself. Now you're an administrator.
Yeah.
You should get all your updated certificates, and then you can go change it back again.
Okay, we'll give it a try.
Give it a try. At least they'll get you off the phone for a couple hours.
Yeah, and I know where you live.
Yeah, yes, you do.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
And I can't say the same at this point, can I? All right.
That's right. And happy birthday to you, Nick.
Thank you, sir.
That was nice.
Yep.
Have fun.
Yeah, there are a nonstop parade of people on the internet who have been having a very similar issue with Eudora and being affected by SSL certificates that have been pushed out.
Yep.
I'm finding all sorts of links related to this. None of them seem to have an amazing yes, here it is type of answer. The fixes tend to be dependent upon a particular situation.
I think so, too. And I think in particular in Brian's situation, if it worked correctly on his wife's account, which is the administrator, and did not work in his, that I believe is the response right there.
Yeah.
It's trying to set something that's normally
locked. He doesn't have privileges.
You would think it wouldn't be, but apparently it is. And so, theoretically, we'll see if this works.
Well, it's Windows 10.
I know
10,
he'll call
though.
Back.
It's Windows 10.
It's Windows 10. Who knows?
anything is possible with that.
And Eudora, even OSE, is not, it's not as modern a product as some of the others.
That's true.
That's certainly part of the issue. Google right now is trying to make the entire internet more secure, which is not a bad thing. But it means eventually, if you do Chrome in particular,
it's going to be a bumpy ride.
If you don't have certificates set on websites, it's going to start warning you that you shouldn't go there.
Yeah, I was reading in January they're going to mark regular HTTP traffic as insecure.
Right.
And so if you're not using a secure encrypted server and an encrypted connection to it, then it's just going to throw up a flag and say, hey,
what that means is that those of us who run websites are going to spend an awful lot of money on certificates.
Yeah. Remind me to open a certificate
Yeah, no kidding.
Store.
The real issue here actually is I run a number of websites that you log into, like Security Tango. Soundbites. But I also run a bunch that you do not need to log into, like Security Tango.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Why do I have to put a secure certificate on that website?
Well, I don't think you want to.
If
I want to be searchable at Google, I do.
Yeah.
Are they going to?
Yes,
they
said they are.
Your services, if it's not HTTPS,
just covers their butt. They're probably just covering their butt, and then that way, by demanding it for all, that way there's no, yes, you can, you can't.
No, and I get that. It's easier to do it that way, and I understand that. But for those of us who have a dozen or more websites, and each one of them now requires a $10 certificate, you do the math. $12, $15 certificate, you do the math.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's for the cheap ones.
There is a place called Let's Encrypt.
Maybe they'll give you a discount for every two. Half price on the other? Third?
Yeah, no, because they don't care. There's a site called letsencrypt.org, which is a new certificate authority, and it's free. The problem is it's not easy to install yet.
Okay.
Depending on where your account is. Now, I'm at Bluehost, and no certificate except the ones you buy from them, and there's a shock, are actually easy to install.
Huh.
So I just have to sit down and do it. And they are free, but it's very painful to do, and so I guess we're back to the pay for it or take the time, and I get that. I do get that.
One or the other.
But I have to sit there and figure it out. Right, right. And I'm retired, so theoretically I should have the time, you would think.
How's that working out for you?
Yeah, so far not so much.
But it just seems like you're busier now.
I am.
Than you were working.
The problem is I find it difficult to say
except to the wife.
Never to the wife.
Like that's right. There's no difficulty there at all. You just don't.
Yes, you just don't even go there.
Yeah.
This is like when the Fonz could never say that he was wrong.
Right. Mm-hmm. I was. Yeah. I can't say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And say later. Just put it off.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, the problem is if I put it off past December, people are not going to be able to.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want you to go to Security Tango and see a security warning.
Right.
That's not a good idea.
You think?
Yeah, exactly. So I've got to do it, and I've got to get it done, and I know that, and I just, it's a pain in the neck. Somebody's going to make a lot of money doing consulting on these things, building these certificates and putting them on people's machines. Maybe there's my new job.
One line item on your web hosting.
Exactly. But that's something. Any of you out there running a website that you care that it's Google searchable, or that you feel people, you know, take a look at your
browser.
No, at the specs, the how many people, how many visitors.
Oh, sure. The analytics.
Thank you. Of your website and see how many people come to you from Chrome.
Right.
Right?
I bet it's a lot.
For me, it's like 90% of my traffic.
Sure.
So I don't want 90% of the people coming to Security Tango to see this is an unsecured site.
Sure.
So I have to fix that. If people only ever come to your site.
Yep.
With Edge, you know, or if you're Microsoft and you don't care where your rankings are at Google because you're
Microsoft.
And you worry about Bing and nothing else, Bing and Edge, and you're done.
Bing's still around, huh?
Hell yeah.
All right. Listeners, if you're a Bing user, please call and tell us why you like Bing.
Yeah.
That's what I want to know.
Yep. Well, people say that they get better results in certain searches.
Okay. Like what?
I don't know, but that's what they say.
So callers.
They just say certain searches. It's easier than actually having to actually say something.
America and people outside America, please call and tell us why you like Bing.
America.
Yeah, that's right.
Call and tell us why you like Bing. I'm a big fan of Chrome. It just is one of the problems with Chrome is that it's a bit of a battery hog.
Yes.
But they're fixing that.
Yeah, I bet it's getting better. It seems to be anything that wants to update itself regularly, Gmail or I use the weather site Weather Underground that will go and check for new updates every so often.
Yep.
Those ones seem to ask for a lot of CPU resources, and it makes sense.
Yep.
And that seems to eat into the battery quite a bit. If I'm at a conference and I take this older laptop with me, I'll switch over to Safari for the day. Yep. And that generally helps my battery last all day long.
Yep. On the other hand, I'm running an entire operating system based on Chrome.
Yes, that's right.
And I get 10 hours on this battery.
Sure.
So
there's got to be some angle.
There's got to be some angle somewhere. And you know, Google's going to, they say they're fixing that. They're going to address it.
Right.
And that's all to the good. Last night, I got to say, I have a CR48, the original reference model of the Chromebook.
Okay.
And last night, just for the heck of it, I plugged it in, waited a while the battery charged up, and I actually updated it to the very latest version of Chrome.
Wow.
It actually worked.
You'll have to tell us what the performance is like when we get back.
It's slow. But okay, we are going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, Jillian Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. It's Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Steve from Greece, New York on the line. Hiya, Steve. What's up?
Well, first of all, happy birthday.
Thank you so much.
So I'm calling in response to your question about using Bing.
Yes, please.
Yes.
If you I'm running Windows 10.
Yep.
Okay.
Microsoft Office. I was creating a template for doing an ebook, and it always failed at a certain step. It gave me a error code. I put that error code into Google, and I got nothing to help me.
Okay.
Just for grins, I put it into Bing. Top answer took care of my question.
Okay. So the answers in Bing were more focused towards what you wanted to do with your Microsoft environment,
right,
when you were composing a template for ebooks.
Right.
Okay.
Now, was it a Microsoft specific problem?
Yeah, in a way. I had to go in and delete a couple files.
There you go.
Okay.
And that's interesting. That's very, very interesting.
That's a good point. If you were living in a Microsoft world, then a Microsoft powered search engine might be more focused towards what you want to find out.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
I'll buy that.
That makes sense. All right, good. Thanks, Steve.
Okay, while I got you on the phone, can I throw one at you?
No, absolutely not. No. Yeah, go ahead.
I'll call back later. Okay, Toshiba satellite laptop, Windows 10 installed. I'm working along. Suddenly, the screen will just go black.
Okay.
Hit the space bar. I have to sign back in again.
Yep.
None of my applications had stopped running. Things were downloading. They were still downloading when all this was going on. All it did, the screen went black, and I had to sign back in again. But nothing stopped running.
Okay.
Yep.
I'm guessing screen lock, Nick?
Yeah. We've seen this problem before, and I don't have an instant answer for you. You probably looked this up on either Bing or Google. What's happened is with Windows 10, there are a number of drivers that were not correct, 100% correct. And the companies have put out driver fixes, but you have to download them. And Toshiba and several other companies actually have this same problem. You have to update the drivers in order for the I'm typing, don't lock the screen to work again.
Okay.
Okay. Give it a shot.
All right. Good luck, Steve.
Okay, I couldn't find it on Bing. All right, thanks a lot, guys.
Have a good one, Steve.
Yep. I had a slightly different problem. I have my Windows 10 laptop is an Asus.
Okay.
And it has a touchpad, and it's got the kind where you can push the screen all the way around and make it a tablet.
Okay, you can flip it. Cool. It's a convertible laptop.
Right, and when you do...
You were going to try to do with hers?
Like I was going to try to do with hers. She wouldn't let me because she says it doesn't do that.
Jill says, no, I'll get in trouble.
Yeah.
Well, you can try it once. Like we were saying before, try it once.
I can make it work.
Yeah.
I can make it happen. I couldn't make
it work.
But you flip it over and it turns off the keyboard.
Okay.
So you can hold it right,
like
while you're doing stuff. The problem was when, and it worked great under Windows 8.1, which is what the laptop came with.
Okay.
When I upgraded to 10, I could no longer do two-finger scrolling on the touchpad,
uh-huh,
and flipping the thing over wouldn't turn off the keyboard. And so I knew it was a driver sensor, problem, yeah. And I waited and waited and waited. And just a week and a half ago, there was an update.
Yeah.
Well, I had to go look for it.
Sure.
Right, but I've been looking regularly, so it could have been up there a month, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But a week and a half ago, I went up and looked for a new update. There it was. I downloaded it. I installed it. Boom, my finger, two-finger scrolling worked again, and flipping the thing over turned off the thing. So it's now back to the way it should be, but it's very possible that Steve is experiencing the same sort of thing with his Toshiba satellite. At some point, you know, Google doesn't make all the drivers. Google doesn't make all the hardware.
True.
Right.
Right. So you have to wait for the company to update their products. And the satellite, while it's a lovely laptop, just like my Asus is, neither one of them is their top of the line. So if they're going to set their priorities on which drivers to do first,
sure.
It's not going to be either for my Asus or his satellite.
Yeah.
So, but they certainly got around to my Asus. I'm sure if he looks for updated drivers, they'll get around to his satellite as well.
Now, what about that CR48 you were talking about, where you were able to
pull it
off and charge it up? You said you got the latest Chrome OS on it.
The absolute latest one, 53.
Uh-huh.
It works great.
Now, how many years old is that?
It is 5 years old.
Okay, and did Google make that, or did they farm out that...
Well, they farmed out the... It's their reference model. So it's essentially a subcontractor built it, but it's a Google product. Google sold it.
Google picked what to put in it. And
somebody else
assembled it.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And it's 5 years old, right?
Right.
So the processor is not particularly great. The RAM is not particularly fast. The SSD card is actually slow.
Yeah.
Right? So the performance is slow.
Right.
And it's only got 2 gigs of RAM, so it's a little underpowered in general, right?
Right.
But it works.
And all the features still work, all the trackpad.
Everything works.
Cool.
Everything works. I am so impressed.
Hmm.
Now, Google has stated that they are giving all of their products a 5-year lifespan.
Okay.
So
this might be it.
This may be the last update that's why I updated it. It's been on my list to do before January.
Yeah, take it and run.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And so that updated just fine, and it may be the last one. But you know what? For a product that costs dang near nothing.
To have 5 years of useful.
To get 5 years of absolutely top notch product,
right.
and have fun with it. I certainly it owes me nothing. I've got my 5 years of money out of it, no question. But the big thing is, we've all seen it. You buy a laptop and 3 years later,
sure,
it doesn't do the new OS, and it doesn't do this, and it doesn't do that. This is 5 years old, and it's still cracking along, and it's pretty amazing to me. I should have brought it today. The problem, of course, is 5 years old, so the battery is starting to go. On the other hand, I can change the battery.
That is the weak spot. But
you know, I haven't done it, but I could do it.
That's
I kept thinking this is going to fail. At first, I thought this isn't even going to update.
Right.
You know, so I started it up, and it takes a while. It's not the fastest. It takes almost 10 seconds rather than 8. So exactly. So I started it up, I went to the, you know, it works exactly the same. Everything's in the same place. So I did that. And actually, it took a little longer because a whole bunch of other, some of the stuff I'd added in, the add-ins, the extensions, were updating. And again, it's a fairly slow processor. So, you know, it's a single-threaded processor. So it was waiting. But I then started the upgrade, and I was sure it was going to fail. It's going to come back and say, yeah, no. And it started the upgrade. It took a while, but it started the upgrade. It did the upgrade. I rebooted. Bang, there it was. I was very impressed.
Now, you said, this is another sidetrack, though. The Chrome R, you're waiting until, what, September, October to look at those?
I don't know which model I want, but yes, the next version of the Chrome operating system, well, actually, the current version of the Chrome operating system, if you're a developer, will run Android apps.
Oh, yes. I've been hearing about this.
So the theory is it will be out of development and into production around October, November, which is also theoretically when the new models come out that will, in fact, run this and take advantage of it.
That would be cool to be able to go to the Android store on your Chromebook and download the apps that you want from there.
How sweet is that? And that, you know, you'll want to have a touch screen for that. And so that, of course, makes the product a little more expensive. Right? So you can still buy the $150 Chromebooks that don't have things like that, and then you can buy the $300 Chromebooks that do.
Right. And, and you've heard of Neverware, right?
I have a an old ThinkPad Idea, ThinkPad Lenovo IdeaPad S10e running cloud. For running those of you who don't know, there's a company called Neverware, neverware.com, and they make a product called Cloud Ready.
Quoth the Raven.
Quoth the Raven. Neverware. Neverware.
How is their favicon on their website? Not a raven.
Exactly. What the heck?
They're leaving money on the table here.
They are exactly right. And what Cloud Ready is essentially the Chrome OS. So I installed it on that old laptop, and now that laptop only has a gig and a half of RAM and an even slower processor than my CR48.
It's more gentle with those things.
Right. And it works. It works really well. Again, the battery isn't that great, but that's not the operating system's fault.
Right.
And it is a Chromebook. I log on with my regular Chrome, my regular Google ID, and it says, "Oh, you're Nick Francesco. Let me load up all your bookmarks and all your extensions and put everything down in the put everything down in the button bar."
Your Google Concierge shows up now, and dusts everything off.
Now, the hands you a beer. It's very nice.
I wonder, though, the other reason I was asking this is, all right, the button bar can get pretty crowded. Now, if all of a sudden, I wonder if they're going to change that, that when it can do the apps from the App Store, if you can place them around the screen as you want.
Like aliases on
Instead of, you know, like current Windows right now, or your phone, how you can arrange them on your desktop.
Right.
Versus having them just along that bar at the bottom.
What I would be just as happy for is the ability to put a folder in that bar.
Right.
And then say, you know, this folder contains my Android apps. This folder contains my utilities. This folder contains my internet stuff. That would be fine with me to be able to put folders.
And I can see, you know, definitely wanting to put an SD card in it.
Oh, sure.
For, you know,
additional storage.
Yeah, because you're going to need it with these apps downloading.
Right.
I mean,
right. And I can put an SD. I haven't seen a version. I haven't seen a Chromebook yet that doesn't. Does that
Jillian? Does yours? Does
your Chromebook? She's got an SD card.
There
slot.
You go.
Have an SD card slot. Yep. No problem.
There it is. Yep. And yeah, somebody was saying to me, "Well, you only have 16 gig of storage on that thing."
Until
I said, "No,
no."
And I took my this is my other Chromebook. I took the thing. I said, "This is 128 gig right here."
Sure.
And I can have an infinite number of those if I want them.
And if you want to, you can also hook up an external drive through the USB 2 or 3.
Right.
And store, you know, have a terabyte.
Right. But we went on a cruise, and I took a Chromebook, and I downloaded a bunch of my movies from Google Play and stored them on an SD card. And so when I wanted to watch a movie, cuz you know on the ship we didn't pay for the Wi-Fi, right? So I could watch a movie. I could listen. I had only about 60 gig of music.
What?
Sadly, that's all I had on there at the time,
come on, man.
But we could listen to music anytime we wanted. We could do anything we wanted, and I just had to swap SD cards. So it was not a hardship to only have a 16 gig SSD card.
Right. Now there are some SD cards now that they come and they're kind of stubby, so you can put them in the slot and they'll stay flush.
Right.
Against the edge. I always thought those were really interesting because that way you don't have something sticking out that could catch on someone else.
Right. The one I had in this sticks out about a quarter of an inch, maybe an eighth of an inch.
Right.
Yeah.
And what size are those?
Those are the regular SD cards. Okay. Regular
and
size
they're
SD
up
cards.
To what? 128 and 256
Oh, yeah.
Now?
I have a 128.
Okay.
Not in this machine. But I have a 128. And
when you format those, do those have to be formatted HFS, or do they have to be formatted NTFS, or
It's standard. NTFS is standard.
Okay.
For these things.
Google has latched onto that.
Less than 32 gig. Yeah, yeah. Pretty much any time. Well, on the Mac, you have a choice.
Sure.
But on Windows, it does it either FAT32.
Right.
Or FAT16. It's FAT32 or FAT16.
Okay, and that's what the Chrome OS uses.
Right, right, right.
It's the FAT32.
Right.
Okay, up until.
Yeah, whatever the standard one is now. Yeah.
Okay.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Larry from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. I've been recently toying with the idea of moving quite a few documents up to iDrive, but Google Drive, and some of them kind of sensitive. Just wanted to know, what's your take on moving sensitive stuff up to Google Drive?
I don't have a problem with that at all. Are you talking about security for other people or from the people at Google?
I guess just Google security, for instance. Can it get hacked? Well, I guess anything could get hacked, but... I guess I'm just wary of moving sensitive stuff to somebody else's drive.
Right. Well, here's the deal.
It's good that you're thinking about these things.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. And you have to understand that Google does have to comply with the rules of every country in which they operate. So if you were living in Russia or China or Korea, you might have a problem.
Right.
But... It is certainly possible that the NSA can get into your files with Google. Yeah? Google says no. They deny that they have granted the NSA access to private data. And so, you know, that's an issue. But as far as other people, you're very secure. Listen, stay on the line. We have to...
This is important.
Yeah, this is important. Don't go away. We're going to take a quick break. But we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, Larry from Rochester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites. It is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Dennis Worcester.
And in 4 minutes after the hour, we've got Larry from Rochester, New York on the line. All right, Larry, here's the deal. Security from your machine to Google is very secure, 256-bit AES encryption, which many consider to be uncrackable, at least until quantum computing comes along. And when they are stored on Google's Drive, they are also 256-bit AES encrypted.
Okay.
So as long as nobody has your password, they cannot get at your files. The question then becomes, how secure is your password?
Yep.
Okay.
It really all comes back to you.
Okay, because like most people, I don't write books like you, but I have things that I consider pretty important to me.
Sure.
And I do have them on my own drive. But, you know, lately I've been toying with the idea of a smaller, lighter laptop or something. And, you know, don't need all the drive space, though I do need my documents. And I'd like to travel and still have access to them. So I was looking at Google Drive as a way to do that, but... it just seems like on some frequent basis, someone either gets broken into or the government demands to have more access to stuff.
Right.
So,
And I don't disagree with that in any way. You prevent other people from breaking into your system by having a really good password.
Right.
And that means long and complex in the sense that it is uppercase, lowercase, numbers, and symbols.
Right.
And long in the sense that it's more than 17 characters. But in terms of, obviously, the government, nobody can answer that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna say. But I do know that if you encrypt your data with a long and complex password, and I don't mean complex like in, you know, unreadable or whatever.
Right.
You know, horse length 37 battery everything. Exclamation point.
Yeah. This, length trumps everything when it comes to passwords.
Right. Then the government will at least have a difficult time getting at your stuff.
Right. Now, my problem now is I find as I get older that these long and complex passwords, I don't remember them myself.
Right.
And right. So I need some way to, you know, to have something to prompt me or use 1Pass or something like that because, you know, the days of 4 characters, 5 characters, even 6 are just not good enough. And so I have passwords now that if I don't have it written someplace and stored,
right,
I can't even remember what it is.
I completely understand that. But remember, complex and long doesn't mean unreadable. Like I said, horse 34 battery exclamation point. Could be a little longer, but horse staple 34 battery exclamation point would work, right? So it's length and complexity in the sense of uppercase, lowercase numbers and symbols.
Right.
Remember, computers don't speak English. So whether your password contains the word horse or the characters JLCDV is exactly the same to the computer.
Oh, I guess I tend not to think of it like that.
Right, but that is the way to think of it. So, for example, I tell people, you know, if your password is, I think that I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree, 34 exclamation point.
Right.
That's a beautiful password. Maybe you scatter some more stuff in the middle there, but basically, that's a beautiful password because it's very long. It's got lots of different characters. It's got numbers. It's got capitals. It's got lowercase. It's got symbols. And it's still readable by you. So now you could keep a list out in the open. And maybe you don't want to use that particular password. But, you know, you could say Google dash Joyce.
Yeah.
Right? Or Kilmer.
Oh.
And now, you know, you'll remember in your head that, all right, so when I go to Google, my password is I think that I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree.
Password is lovely as a tree.
What?
You could make it a password as lovely as a tree.
Exactly. You can do whatever you want with it. But the basic idea is whether it's a poem you like, a quote you like, a music lyric you like, don't make it the quote you use all the time or the song lyric that you tend to hum all the time or, you know, like that.
Mm-hmm.
But you can, as long as it's fairly lengthy and contains upper, lower numbers and symbols, mm-hmm. That is exactly what is needed to protect it, and that is what protects your 256-bit AES encryption at Google. So, again, the longer that is, the longer it takes to break.
Okay.
There is a website called Gibson Research, GRC.com.
Password Haystack?
Yeah. One of the things they have is a thing called the Password Haystack. And so you can put in anything you like. I think that you can put in spaces.
Yep, and they will analyze how many days or years it would take a reasonably fast computer to potentially find that out of a brute force search.
And that site is what again?
I'll put it up on the website, but it's grc.com/haystack.htm. And basically, I just put in, I think that I shall never see, with capital I's and spaces, followed by the number 34, followed by an exclamation point.
Uh-huh.
And at the absolute fastest massive cracking array that assumed 100 trillion guesses per second, it would take 5.34 billion trillion 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 centuries to break. If that's not secure enough for you, I'm sorry.
I don't think I'd be worried about that.
The Earth will be swallowed by the sun before that.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not going to be around. That's not safe only, to say you're not going to be around.
I won't believe the universe will not be around.
I'd be dead by then. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, okay. If I can find
well,
something.
Well, guys, thank you. You've given me a lot to think about. And certainly, I think I'm going to go back and take a little time horsing around with passwords and things like that. I've been shying away from really long and complex because you start to write them down, and as soon as you start to write them down, if they're not secure, somebody else gets it, and you have no security.
Well, yeah. Put a copy right. of well, that on your safe
you can use
box.
Things like NPass or LastPass or OnePass. Again, using a long password, then that's really the only one you have to remember.
Right.
And then that will help.
Okay. Well, as usual, thank you for your help.
No, thank you.
Anytime.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Have a good
bye.
Day. All right. Have fun.
Yeah, I put one in. I used a few, and it ran the analysis on that, and it said 75 years.
Okay.
I thought, yep, that'll work for me. I can handle that. You it's a nice that. Length, and I can remember them. So, 75 years, yeah, I won't be around. So I'll run the risk. If somebody's got that much time on their hands, want to try to get into my menial little stuff, more power to them. Let them spend the next 75 years trying to do it, because then I won't be around anyway.
And then they can finally get access to all those old bowling scores you have from 1987 written down on your computer.
No, believe it or not, I started bowling. It's funny you mention that, because I was just going by, coming up Ridge Road, and right there where the old Century Liquor and that is, there's a bowling alley. It's still going. Don's Bowling Alley. Okay. It used to be called Dom Brothers. And back when I was a kid, maybe 11, 12 years old, I used to be on a league there. That's where I first started bowling, was Dom Brothers.
Okay.
Down there. And it was so much fun. It was on a Saturday morning. My dad would take me and my uncle.
Get you out
to
of the house.
Go bowling.
Nice.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun because my uncle loved to bowl.
There used to be a bowling alley on West Avenue. I used to live in Lincoln, and it was right around the corner at the end of Lincoln. And I was so excited when I was finally old enough to be allowed to walk down myself.
Yeah. Did they have automatic pin setters then?
Yes. One was named Fred.
Okay.
The other was named Joe.
Okay. Yes. My uncle did that as a kid.
Yep.
He got paid by the frame. And that was how he made some spending money, was being at the far end of the lane and setting the pins back up.
The first time I went, and there was a guy back there, and I'm getting ready to bowl, and I look, and there's feet dangling. Because they sit up in the thing.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's the job I want. Okay. I want that job when I'm old enough. And by the time I was old enough, they had automatic pin setters.
Yeah, my uncle.
Automation hit me at a young age.
There was a church down there on Hudson Avenue. It used to have bowling alleys down in the basement.
Yep, more than one did.
Yeah, and my uncles used to set pins there.
Yep, yep. Those we're old people. We're old. We even remember bowling. That's how old we are.
Yes, before the Wii.
Before the Wii. When bowling actually was the 3D, and this is amazing.
It's real time.
It's real time.
These graphics are fantastic.
Yeah, I love the resolution. It's almost like reality.
I'm right. It's like I'm right there.
But yeah, those were certainly the days.
They even got the smells.
And yet, they even have the smells. It's exactly right. Our next caller is Jason from Altoona, PA. Hiya, Jason. What's up?
Nothing much. I was just listening to your password conversation, and I thought I would offer a suggestion which has worked for me, and I just checked one on the haystack, and it's worth 1.04 million trillion centuries.
There you go, which is?
Well, I'm not going to tell you mine. But
no.
But yeah. The suggestion I had was something I actually pulled from Star Trek, the command protocols that they use to activate, like, the auto-destruct sequence.
Oh, sure.
I just punched in the one that they used in First Contact, Picard 4-7 Alpha Tango.
Yep.
It's easy to remember. It's quick. It's easy. And yet it's still worth a couple hundred, bazillion centuries.
Yep. Yep. I've tried it with and without numbers and exclamation points and, whatever. And I have found that adding those things lengthens it even more. But even without them, as you found,
it's still pretty
lengthy. Certainly longer than you care about.
Right, right. That's a great suggestion. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. If you're a Star Trek fan, your last name and a couple of digits and a couple of characters, and bam, you've got a decent password that's almost impossible to break.
Yeah, the problem with that, though, Jason, is if everybody knows you're a Star Trek fan and they're a Star Trek fan, they will eventually try that. Like, I had a guy, he was gone, and we needed to get into his computer. This is where I worked, so I was given permission by the boss to see if I could hack his machine.
Okay.
So I sat down at his machine, and he had a poster on his wall for...
You knew his wife's name.
The X-Files.
I
put in trust no one, didn't work. Trust no one with the number one, boom, I was in.
Uh-huh.
So it really needs to be something that people don't know you're passionate about.
Yeah.
But other than that, yes, I completely agree with you. Those are the kind of passwords that you will remember and that work just fine.
Right, but even if you're not a Star Trek fan, the simple way of assembling a few small words together into a nice long one
exactly.
is where the benefit comes from. But
true.
It's just a sequence that seems to work.
Yep, that's exactly right, Jason. Thank you. That's exactly the right thing. I like pie very much, exclamation point.
What?
There's a...
Oh, that's what your password is.
That's my password. Right, thanks, Jason. Of course, if you're a Twin Peaks fan... Damn fine pie. Damn fine cup of coffee. So those are the kind of things that passwords are not hard anymore.
They don't have to be.
No.
You know, we used to tell people it had to be an unpronounceable, unreadable, unusable...
dictionary word.
Jumble. Right.
Yeah, you can do it just by simply taking, a few, a common word,
right.
adding some numbers, and then some characters,
right.
explanations, ands, or whatever, before,
right.
after. Like I said, anywheres in it. Like I said, I ran it, and it said for this one... two different ones, 70, I think it was like 75 years for one, and then I forget the other was a little bit more, because they added double characters.
Yep.
So,
I have seen some very easy to remember, but cleverly complex, in terms of what a computer would understand, complex passwords that, leave you 100,000 years. Like the one I typed in earlier, they're... easy enough to do, suddenly your system is actually secure. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. It is Sound Bites. It is member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Hey. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we... our sound bites.
I like that. That's a catchy little.
That's
intro.
A catchy little tune. And of course, yeah.
You know who did that one? You remember Alan Thicke?
Yeah,
yeah.
From the '80s. That's his son.
Oh, really?
It not was. So thick.
Oh, bada bing.
I was just going to say, with Steve not here, we're not on YouTube today, so
that's
I
right.
can do my chair dancing without worrying about. Anybody throwing up?
I don't think Rob's not watching, hopefully.
Yeah, right.
Because remember, he can see you.
Eye in the sky.
Eye in the sky.
All right. We got some news?
We do have some news. I think we're going to do this news.
All right.
It's another Apple thing. Apple recently
Apple
promised to clean up its App Store by removing old, outdated, and non-compliant applications. That could see hundreds of thousands of apps being booted. Apple, of course, didn't specifically detail its criteria for kicking out older apps, saying only that the apps are, and I quote, no longer function as intended or don't follow current review guidelines or haven't been supported with compatibility updates for a long time. The latter item, however, that long time, is where there's room for speculation on the impact this purge will have on the App Store. How long is long, after all? That's unclear. Still, it's fairly surprising how many apps have been released but not maintained when you dig into the numbers. Top active app developers update their apps at least every month or two, if not more frequently. In fact, a report from last year found that the top iOS developers average 45 days in between updates on average. Average 45 days on average. Seems I apologize right. for having said that.
Yes, from the brought to you by the Department for Redundancy Department.
Right. You're writing this stuff and it all makes perfect sense, and then you read it out loud the next day and you're thinking, you're an idiot.
I tell my kids to do that before they turn anything in.
Yep.
Doesn't hurt.
Yep. Pay attention.
That's right.
Smaller and indie developers may not have the resources to maintain quite as fast-paced a schedule, but it's still reasonable to think that an entirely an actively maintained app would be at least updated annually at a minimum, or when a new OS operating system was released or new hardware arrives. Most apps aren't, though. There are 2.1 million active apps in the App Store worldwide today, but 50% of all apps have been abandoned by developers since May 2015.
Yeah.
With half of the App Store potentially up for deeper examination, Apple's marketplace could soon look a lot different following the coming purge. And seriously, how many fart apps do we actually need? In addition, a quarter of all iOS apps haven't been updated since November 2013. And only 20% of the apps have been updated in the last 3 months. This gives you an idea of how few apps are actually maintained after their App Store debut. Meanwhile, one group of apps is likely to get kicked out of the App Store are those which were never updated to support the larger screen of the iPhone and subsequent models.
Right.
11.4% of all updates fit this description, and 10% of all iOS apps haven't been touched by their developers since the days of the iPhone 4. Now, 10% doesn't sound like a lot until you remember there are 2.1 million active apps.
That's right.
Another way of looking at the situation is to count how many apps are truly ancient and abandoned. 328,000 iOS apps haven't been updated in 3 or more years. It wouldn't be surprising to see all of those put on notice. Meanwhile, roughly 40% of apps were updated in the last 3 months, and 7.5% don't support the iPhone 6 or newer. We'll soon know how Apple decides which apps will be removed as it begins reviewing and removing applications from the App Store. This coming Wednesday, I think it is. Those that crash upon launch, of course, will be removed immediately, while other affected developers will have 30 days to receive, after receiving a request from Apple to submit an update. Otherwise, their app will be removed. Are you worried that your favorite app might get killed? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
You know, there are a lot of things that Apple does that I don't agree with, but this is one that I think has been long overdue.
Absolutely.
The marketplace, let me start at the beginning. You remember Atari?
I do.
From the early 80s, late 70s. Became wildly popular. One of the first home video game systems that, that had the popularity.
Pong.
Sure, and kind of grew from there. So at a certain point, they started having systems where you could buy software in the form of a cartridge you could plug in and play on your TV. That was going through the roof, super popular. They were all over the place. Every kid in every neighborhood had one. What happened was the investors saw this, and developers saw this, and they started making what we now call shovelware, which means anything you can shove onto a cartridge to put on a shelf at a store and make a buck. And what happened is 30 years later, we had the same situation happen. Well, 35 years later, we had the same situation happen with the Apple App Store. We had some really popular apps, and then we had people that would come in and make essentially clones of those, change a couple of things, change some background music, and put it out and compete. And they would play this weird game where they would adjust the name so slightly, or adjust the description so slightly,
right.
or adjust the search term so it would come up at least as often as the original legitimate game. And it's really tricky to compete when you've got a marketplace that is so saturated and makes it hard to understand if you're getting the thing that you really wanted to, or if you're having to wade through two dozen apps that are close but not the one that you really wanted in order to get what you need. So if Apple's going back and number one saying, okay, if you haven't updated it to support anything since the original iPhone, since we changed the screen with the iPhone 4 in whatever that was, 2009
right.
or so,
right?
Then, you know, hey, we definitely want to get you on the phone and understand what's going on and see if you're still serious.
Right.
And for all those people that were making shovelware, that's never going to happen. So those are going to get booted. For anybody who hasn't updated anything more recently to better take advantage of some of the APIs that Apple's made available, you know,
yep.
they may not know about it or they may not care.
Yep.
The other problem is the way discovery happens. When you go to the App Store and you look for things, you don't always find what you're looking for. And that can be a challenge. If you yep. are an independent developer, it's really, really tricky to get your app in front of people and have a lot of success.
Apple has become a victim of their own success.
That's right.
There's a statistic that says if you search for something on Netflix to watch for more than 8 minutes, you'll go somewhere else.
Hmm.
And I suspect that's a much lower number when you're looking for sure. apps.
Mm-hmm. If you can't find it on yeah. like the second or third try,
that's exactly right.
Just give up or text somebody to figure it out,
or you type in a search term and you see there's 8,000 results.
Yes.
Well, people at that point, screw it. I'm not playing.
Sure. Yeah. So you know, it makes to have an app store where you can find what you want and the app is of sufficient quality and you can get it quickly. That's exactly what Apple wants because it makes their brand stronger.
Yep.
And if they can clean up their app store to do this, it makes a lot of sense. Independent developers just don't have the resources to put out a marketing blitz whenever they push out a new app.
Yep.
And the big players do. And if they're not getting those independent developers, if they're not getting the return on investment, if you work on an app for 6 months and put it out and only make a couple of grand, depending upon where you live, you know, if you live somewhere where the cost of living is super, super low, maybe that's acceptable. But
right.
for lots of people, that's just a false economy. It's just not working out.
Yep.
So they will abandon the app.
And the
Apple
other
wants
issue,
to sweep up and clean that stuff up.
Right. And the other issue, of course, is that maybe you can now, but it used to be you couldn't install anything that wasn't in the App Store.
Well, that's still true. Apple is very interested in security. And again, because right. they want their product and the experience to be everything that they can have it be, security is very important to them. So right. getting things directly from the App Store that are built using Xcode, that are delivered from Apple servers so that they can sign it from their end so that you get the app that you intended to get and that nobody's messed with it in the meantime, those are things that they're very concerned about.
Well, but that now means that if, for example, I work for a company and write an app for my company,
right.
I have to put it in the App Store.
You can self-host it and push it out with something called a profile. It doesn't have to go in the public App Store.
Oh, okay.
You can get what they call an enterprise developer account.
All right, because that worried me because that means, you know, 65 different plumbing apps, 150 hospital apps,
sure.
et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
You want to develop a new app? I got one for you.
Yeah.
All right. As you know, I got the flaming Note 7.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
All right. Here's an app that
we
think folks...
We can hardly hear you through your welder's mask.
That is going to definitely be needed. When I got the Note, you know, I went to set up the Google contacts
yep.
from the contacts. All of a sudden, I noticed some folks are missing.
Okay.
I go, oh, no. What it does is it sits there, depending on how you put them in the phone. I looked in to under my settings, and whether you're saying all contacts, just the Google contacts, just the cloud contacts, just the Verizon
yep,
contacts,
yep.
they're all separate lists.
Yeah.
Now, if you say all, I could have a contact, like say you, Nick, I could have you in under my Google, my Verizon, and the cloud. So you appeared three times.
Yep, I have that same problem.
So
yep.
what they need to do is come up with an app that you can turn around and say, all right, take all the folks
these.
And consolidate to one that this, I could say, all right, a custom, and boom, bring them all together as one.
I think you can merge, I think.
Well, that's what I tried to do. And what I wound up doing, because 90% of them were all in my Google,
yeah,
I went through every contact, and if they weren't listed on my Google, I went into my Google contacts on my computer, added them in. The minute I added them in on my computer at home, boom, they showed up on my phone as a Google contact. This way I was able to just say, just display my Google contacts.
Right.
Boom. You know, now everybody was there because all of a sudden I'm looking to go to dial somebody and they're missing. I'm going, all right, what are they under? So I spent one evening, and it took me a good hour or so, going through all my contacts, make sure they all had the Google symbol there. Because like Nick, most of my stuff is all through Google.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the photos, the documents, everything. I do everything now Google. And I love it. And the same with the contacts. You know, once you get a new phone, what did they have you do? Sign into your Google account. Boom, everything comes down.
Right.
Programs and all this other stuff. So I just moved everything over there. Right. And matter of fact, once I was done, I went over to the Verizon because they give you so much storage space there and deleted all the contacts there. I go, I don't need them. You know, I can use that space for other stuff.
Sure.
So.
Right.
Yeah, well,
one thing you should know is that in regular contacts, right, if you go to the thing, one of the choices in the menu is manage similar contacts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I already did this. So what it does is it brings up, you know, all the Dave Enrights.
Yep.
And says, you've got one in Facebook, you've got one here, you got one. Do you want to merge them?
Yeah, it did that.
So you can say that.
But it still, once it did it, and you tell it to display all, it still displayed like you three times.
Oh, that's interesting. Mine didn't do that. Interesting.
Yeah, well, you know, this note is proving to be more and more fun.
That's exactly.
But I got to admit, I do love it. It's, you know, a real nice big screen.
Yeah.
Which I love. It's fast. The camera on it is unbelievable, even for low light. We were out and, you know, I was taking some pictures at night and at dusk. They came out fantastic. You know, the battery life so far is great on it. Hasn't burnt up yet. but, you know, no, I'm very satisfied with it. It's what I wanted. And like I say, I love some of the other features into it. I'm getting to, you know, more and more discover, like with the pen and writing and then have it converted to text.
Yeah.
I love that feature. And, you know, it's just good all the way around. Like I say, I just got to get this battery issue resolved. Like we said before, if they had just made it a removable battery, I'd be okay.
Yeah.
But again, I got one of the lower end models for storage because, again, I don't need a lot on the phone because I store everything up on the cloud.
Right. So if you're both Android users, I'm not an Android user, but I'm interested in learning more about it. How do you go about picking your next phone? Are you partial to a particular manufacturer, or are you looking for specific features and then try and figure out which phones are offering that?
For me,
it's price sensitive.
For me, it's the features and the battery.
Okay,
because you know I don't have a home phone anymore. Everything for me is right there. You know, I got rid of the landline a long time ago, and that's the only phone I have, as most folks nowadays. Very few folks have home phones anymore.
Okay, so you're looking at battery life, and you don't really care who the manufacturer is.
Well, then battery life would be the first, and then the features. Like I say, I like having the nice camera.
Yep.
And the other things that, you know, it can do as far as screen size. And on the note, there is a little thing on the side. It looks like a little shadow because it's an edge. You can swipe it, and you can pull up your contacts. You can set up different bars on the side. I like having the pen there so I can write text, and it'll convert it right to regular text and send it.
What about you, Nick?
I prefer a couple of things. Screen size.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I'm fine, but my eyes are old. And I like the wireless charging.
Okay. So you start with that feature and work backwards.
I work backwards. So it doesn't have to be built in. I can buy, you know, as long as I can buy a new, like with the phone I have now, the S5, did not come with wireless charging, induction charging.
A different back on it.
But I can put a different back on it. And with my old phone, I had, what was important to me was a removable battery because I could buy a second battery.
Okay.
right, and then charge both of them and carry them both around and switch in the middle of the day if I needed to.
Right.
Now I've got an induction charger in my car. I've got an induction charger in my desk.
Okay.
I've got an induction charger at the head of my bed. So I don't worry about that anymore. But and when we come back, I'll talk more about it. This is an excellent question.
Okay.
And I'll tell you more about what I do, which is 39 minutes after the hour. We're going to take a quick break. Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, Nick Francesco, and you. It's Soundbites. And Jillian Worcester, it's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Dennis Worcester.
I'm Jillian Worcester.
And at 42 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. So I've already told you about my, I want a big screen.
Big screen. And you cannot lie.
I cannot. Yeah. Right? I want wireless charging because I never want to plug anything into my phone ever again.
Right.
And the third thing I like is the ability to put in an SD card.
Okay.
Although, as Dave said, and I agree, being able to put everything in the cloud means I don't need a lot of storage on the phone. But, for example, when we went on our cruise, there was no cloud storage. So the ability to take maybe 1,000 pictures and store them on an SD card, and then they would automatically go up to the cloud
when
that's we were
one
done.
That's one thing I do have in this this phone.
Yeah.
My SD card from my 5 went into this one, and yeah, I can put a 64 gig SD card in there if I want. It's just that much more storage.
Yep, and so those are the three things that are important to me.
Okay, all right. Now that we talked about picking features before you pick a brand, or picking features before you pick a particular model, and what I want to know is, when it comes to OS updates on my Apple stuff, what I know is I can just go get the latest one whenever I'm ready. And when it comes to Android stuff, I've heard that sometimes the carriers won't let you get the most recent one, or sometimes if you buy something called apparently a Nexus phone, those are the kind of the top end machines, and those let you get whatever you want.
Well, here's the deal, and now luckily we have 10 minutes because you've started me off now.
Sorry.
Here's the thing. In fact, almost none of the carriers, the problem with Google's Android is that in order to pick up market share and to get it actually out into the world, they had to make deals with both carriers and hardware companies. So they have an issue where when Google announces or releases, rather, a new version of the operating system, the hardware manufacturers have to get their fingers in it to make it compatible with their phones. And then the carriers have to get their fingers in it to make it compatible. In fact, in 90% of the cases, what that means at both ends is they're just adding their own bloatware in so that they can get paid.
Well, yeah, whoever actually handed them some money.
Right, right. Unless you have a Nexus phone, which, by the way, Google is going to call, I believe, the rumor is they're going to call them Pixel phones now because apparently they don't own the name Nexus. They're going to call them Pixel phones, like they have the Pixel Chrome Pixel, Chromebook Pixel.
Got it.
And those are explicitly from Google, and they are updated directly OTA over the air.
Okay.
By Google.
All right.
Now, in terms of the other things, the FCC has recently said, you know, many of the updates that you carriers and you manufacturers are holding up are security updates, and we don't like that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So figure out how to make it happen in a timely manner, which to the FCC is days rather than months or years.
Right.
Figure out how to make it happen in a timely manner, or we will start fining you. You know, hundreds of thousands of dollars for every day that you're that you're behind.
Well, yeah, because you have to have an FCC license to be able to broadcast on a particular part of spectrum.
Exactly. And they're saying that it's a security problem. In fact, they're saying it's a national security problem.
Okay.
To have phones that have known vulnerabilities, have a fix in place.
That exists already.
Right.
Yeah.
And that fix is not being rolled out to the phones
in a timely
manner.
Whatever that means.
Whatever that means.
The courts.
Right. Right, exactly, exactly.
That's
so
why we have judges.
That's going to change.
Okay.
But it hasn't changed yet, because right. obviously you can't just say, change it tomorrow.
Okay, so if getting the latest updates were really, really important to me, then it sounds like a Nexus brand phone from Google is the one
soon
to
be Pixel.
Right, yes. Yeah. Right.
The other thing is, do you want a pure Google experience on your phone?
I prefer to have whatever Google intended for me to see, to
exactly.
be what I'm seeing, and not to have other third parties.
Exactly. A lot of the third parties have their own skins that they put over.
Sure.
And, of course, you can download themes and do all kinds of cutesy stuff. But
yeah.
They have their own themes that they overlay over the Google
right.
framework. One of the things I like about the Samsung is it doesn't do much of that.
Okay. The only potential exception might be some type of tool that would let me track how much of my monthly data I might be have used.
And, in fact, you can download that app from Verizon.
Sure.
I know for sure.
Okay, so it doesn't have to be baked into a phone
right.
directly from them.
Right,
okay.
right, right. Right now, if you want, I need to have exactly the experience that the phone OS manufacturer wants me to have, and I want an update in the most timely manner, it's Apple.
Okay.
But that's certainly going to change.
And these Pixels are probably the next best thing on the Android side.
Right. Pixels are essentially the iPhone of the Android world.
Got it.
Okay. And that's going to be the next that's going to be, I think, my next phone as well.
Okay.
It depends. I haven't seen the specs yet, so I don't know. Right? So who knows? But that's what it looks like. And there's the my Verizon data.
Oh, okay. I see
thing.
It.
Yeah, yeah. So it tells me that I've used wow.
What are we?
Wow.
A little over a week into the month. Or is this per billing cycle?
It's per billing cycle, and I think
I don't know when
my cycle ends either. It better be like next week. either that, or my daughter just downloaded a metric.
All that Netflix is finally catching up with you.
I'm not going to sign in from this. It knows who I am. It's telling me what my stuff is. How come I have to sign in again?
I don't know. They want to make sure that you are you.
Apparently, they do. But yeah, so in terms of that, I think my next phone, I'm going to look hard at the actual Google Nexus or Pixel or whatever they call it next week.
Okay.
Phone is going to be before I make any sort of decision.
Now, are those typically released with some sort of press event? And, Apple does a big event. They announce it a month in advance. And Google has their I/O thing for developers. Are new products announced just whenever they're ready?
Sometimes.
Or is it
have Google I/O every year.
Sure.
And so they sometimes announce them there, but sometimes stuff just slides in. For example, the other day I was looking at, I was writing a thing in Google Docs, and I noticed when I went to go file save as that there's a new, I don't know what I just did. I just clicked on something I didn't want to click on. But I went to file download, to download it as.
Yes.
And there's a new choice at the bottom, EPUB publication. I have no idea how long it's been there. I never saw it before.
Okay.
Apparently, I can write my book, download it as an EPUB, and I'm done.
Wow.
Yeah. Who knew?
What are you going to do with the rest of your weekend?
Exactly right. Exactly right. So, and you can, but when did that come in? I didn't see it before, but I haven't really paid attention for the longest time.
Sure.
Because I don't generally download stuff.
Yeah, those features are coming in all the time. They're
right.
constantly tinkering and improving and adding
right.
capabilities.
I was showing somebody the functions in the spreadsheet.
Yes.
And there were suddenly like twice as many as there used to be.
Right. Now, I remember the spreadsheet way back when. There was just a limit on the number of columns and rows.
There's still a limit, but it's a huge limit.
But now I'm sure it's much bigger.
Yeah. But in general, yeah, I don't use much of anything else anymore. I can't tell you the last time I opened LibreOffice on my Linux box, except accidentally.
Clicked on the wrong icon.
Right. But that's, I use Google for everything. It does everything I need it to do. And, oh, by the way, it's free.
Mm-hmm.
And constantly updated.
And constantly being updated. So I really do like it. And it doesn't really matter what operating system you have. You can still do it on your phone or your desktop or your laptop or your whatever it is. Jillian and I both use Chromebooks.
Yes,
as do
fairly regularly, and so does Dave. And so, you know, we're running the full Google experience here as
it's
well.
Catching on.
But
it's
although,
catching on.
You know, like I said, looking at that Chrome R.
Yeah. Well, as a, whatever. Well, for, I don't know what hardware I'm going to get because I'm waiting to
Christmas.
See what the new stuff is.
Well,
right.
You gotta wait.
Right.
You can be assured that they'll start teasing folks come October.
Yep.
You know, to get those pre-holiday sales sparking early.
Yep.
Because, you know, God forbid you wait until November or December to get it. You know, you got to order months in advance.
Right.
But, yeah, it'll be interesting because Chromebooks and just notebooks are becoming, and tablets are the hot items anymore. Right. Desktop computers, you don't, you go to most stores. What are they advertising? You see mostly laptops.
Right.
Right.
The big boxes, not too much. Maybe one or two.
Right.
They just...
And that's the progression
that's
we've
going
seen
the trend.
For decades and decades and decades. Machines used to take up an entire room, and then machines are about the size of your washer and dryer put together.
Right.
And then machines were the size of your desk, and now machines were the size of something you could fit on your desk. And now then they were the size of a large shoebox. Or and now they'll fit right on your lap and in your hand.
Well,
and
look
your
at
wrist.
What the well, like I say, when Dick Tracy came out with the phone, you know, in his wristwatch, they thought that was all that. Yeah, that's way out there. Look what you're
now.
You
I have that.
Yeah, you can get on your wrist now. It's like hello. And there was that other one. It never really came about. Was the computer where you wore the band. And it projected down your arm.
Oh.
And you could sit there.
Yeah, that was a prototype, and who knows if it'll ever come out.
But wouldn't put it past it down the road if they can, you know, improve it
with
technology and everything else.
Yep.
You know, it's just a matter of time.
All this stuff is evolving.
If you can dream it.
If you can dream it.
Technology will find you.
Somebody will make it. It's this stuff is all out there. It's all coming out more. You know, and then with Never Ready.
Neverware
is cloud ready. You can have new life for old laptops. We don't know yet if those are going to run Android apps.
Right.
And, of course, most of the old laptops you would put them in do not have touch screens.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So I'm looking for my new machine. I want something with a touch screen. I want something with at least a 13-inch screen, if not a 14-inch screen.
14 would be my minimum.
Yeah. See, 13 is okay for me.
Jillian said she got back to school this week. She picked up her Chromebook from the school district, and she got it home, and she said, "It seems so much smaller now." So when it comes to screen size, you know, you have to think ahead.
That's exactly right. But as far as that's concerned, you know, I don't know what I'm going to get in terms of hardware, but I'm very excited to look forward to it.
Fantastic.
All right. That music tells me that you've wasted another 2 solid hours of your life. On this, the Nick Francesco birthday edition.
That's right.
Of Sound Bites. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Dennis Worcester.
Thank you.
I want to thank Jillian Worcester for letting him come today. She's not going to speak. and I'm Nick Francesco. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow. And we will be back in just a week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's exactly right. You've been listening to Sound Bites right here on the truly great and solely member supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you in 166 hours. Thanks for listening.